There's a lot of pressure.
I don't know. Hi guys. Yeah. That's how you beginning.
Do you want to start it?
No.
Too much pressure. Okay. Hello and welcome to another episode of the IAAF Inside Athletics Podcast. And it's the Doha preview special. I'm joined by Thomas Byrne.
Hello.
And John Mulkeen, or Statman John, as you may know him from Twitter.
Hello.
So guys, Doha is right around the corner. The championships are starting tomorrow. It's been a long season, to say the least, and it feels almost surreal that we're finally here. What are your guys' key thoughts out of the champs?
Exactly that, really. It's been a long old season, and in many regards, I think some of the champions will be survivors of the fittest. I think we were just kind of chatting amongst ourselves just now, and a few names that maybe at the start of the season you'd be picking as podium potentials, names like Evan Jaeger, for instance, was the one that we were just chatting about, haven't made it because it's such a long season. You know, we're getting on to October now. So it's all about who's peaked at the right time, who's managed their bodies the best, who's come through the season maybe without putting their head above the parapet too much, but is preparing to really explode onto the scene over the next 10 days or so.
Yeah, the whole season has had a different kind of vibe about it, and it's something that we really notice at the Diamond League finals. Normally, Zurich and Brussels, it's, you know, the kind of end of season thing. Some athletes are almost kind of letting their hair down already because they're after the big champs. But this time, Zurich and Brussels, everyone's still very much on the game, and it made for two really exciting finals because you still knew that, obviously, the big show of the year was yet to come. And yeah, it's been a long season, but it's not something that hasn't been done before. Like, obviously, Sydney Olympics was held this late. I think 88 Olympics was around this time as well. So yeah, it's good to see like this current generation of athletes being put through a late season global champs.
Yeah, and importantly, it's not, you know, it's the same for every athlete. It's not like you know, some athletes are being affected adversely more than others. It's been set in the calendar for a long time. Yeah. Coaches, managers, athletes themselves have been able to plan for this for basically 6 years. So if they haven't got their game together, then, you know, maybe they need to look at themselves. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but it's an October championships, and as you say, there's precedent for them. There's examples of other athletes who've performed successfully throughout the year, and yeah, it's the same for everyone. So
I think it is particularly interesting as well because we have had a bit of a gap in competition now since the Diamond Leagues. Really, they've kind of been the last major event we've had, and it's been about a month, and it's really about how have people timed their season. You know, some people kind of feel like they were on their way up just as the Diamond Leagues were ending. I'm kind of thinking, for example, Dina Asher-Smith. She kind of finished her season with a bit of a bang in Brussels, where she won the 100, ran season's best. And conversely, Shelly Ann, who had run 10.7 and had been smashing out some pretty fast times all year, actually got beaten quite convincingly. And again, I'm not saying there's a right way or wrong way to peak, but it is interesting the trajectory in which athletes are going. And obviously we have got this, I don't know, 3 week to a month break for some of the athletes. And again, whether they get a block of training in between now and then, I don't know.
I'm just going to pick up on that women's 100 because you are right to say that Dina was a convincing winner in Brussels over Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce. But if we think back to Eugene or the Prefontaine Classic Diamond League meeting that happened in Stanford this year, that was another race where Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce probably would admit that she underperformed in that one. And that was following the championship's performance where she ran incredibly fast, 10.7, was it?
Yeah.
And she won after Prefontaine in Lausanne, in London, where she beat Dina on both occasions. So I think you're right that the most recent performances perhaps aren't a massive indicator of what will happen over the next 10 days. They are maybe more of an indicator of where athletes are in terms of the training blocks that they've put in place before the championships.
I think women's sprints is perhaps a good place to start. If we are talking women's sprints, what do you think the highlights we're going to expect to see in Doha?
I think the 400, obviously, is it Monaco last year where Shaunae Miller-Weaver and Salwa Nasser had that great head-to-head, and
when was the last time they raced?
Well, exactly. I think that is the last time they've raced.
Yeah,
over 400. So to see them both in a championship setting again will be a really good battle. And yeah, both 100 and 200. Because Elaine Thompson, she's kind of had a bit of an up and down season, but it wouldn't be, you know, a complete surprise if she did come out and, you know, brought back the kind of form that she had in Rio and won both sprints. But then again, she has shown that she's beatable, so it will make for a couple of close contests.
Yeah, you know what as well, I'm going to say it. Daphne Schippers in the 200 metres. I know that she, perhaps a lot of people think that maybe she's past her best and hasn't had the best year, but she's such a championship performer. I would be very surprised if she was not on the podium in the 200 metres.
I think she's had a back injury. There's some like articles in the Dutch press saying that she's been struggling with this back injury. And she's still going to compete, obviously, but mm-hmm. she's almost kind of realised herself that she's not in the same kind of form that she'd like to be in. But yeah, it's still behind Dina and maybe Elaine if she's in her best form.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty open for the rest of the podium, so yeah, she could definitely still be there or thereabouts, I think.
Yeah, I think Skippers will be knocking on the door of a podium finish, mm-hmm. for sure. She's
World champion.
She's world champion. She did win in Oslo. Probably wasn't the strongest field that we've seen all season. I can't remember, that was 100, actually, but she did pick up a win in Oslo mm-hmm. earlier on this season. And actually, she's been a lot more relaxed at press conferences and press engagements this season than I've seen in the past, and I wonder whether there is a bit less pressure on herself from within her own camp because of that injury that she's been there since season long. But that's it's a pretty good starting point if you go into a championships with not too many expectations upon yourself, because good sprinting is relaxed sprinting. So we'll see what she does in particular, but yeah, it's women's sprints is kind of wide open in the 100s and 200s. Probably the favourite in both is Dina, would we agree?
I maybe say one favourite in the 200. 100, I honestly, I don't know.
I'd still put Shelly-Ann up there, and yeah, if Elaine is in her best form.
There's such a hard, I mean, because I know Elaine struggles with her Achilles and she's a bit up and down, and you just don't know. With Shelly-Ann and Elaine, I feel like Dina's perhaps more consistent, with the Jamaicans, you just don't know who's going to turn up on the day. So it's going to be exciting either way. I think an interesting note as well is perhaps the lack of American representation. I guess perhaps Tori Bowie will be maybe the one.
She's an interesting one because she's not really raced much this year, but you know, she's the defending champion, she's a 10-7 sprinter, so who knows.
Yeah, I think you pick up on a good point. One athlete that hasn't been spoken about all season mm-hmm. but has performed really well is Brittany Brown. She's raced in Prefontaine, which on the back of that she managed to get a professional contract. She won at the match in Minsk, I believe, and she was second behind Shawnee Miller in that world record 300 run in Ostrava as well, but no one seems to have picked up as a potential medal. I think if you were looking for an outside bet for someone who might finish on the podium in the women's 200, it would be Brittany Brown.
Okay. For the men's side, I feel like in terms of sprinting in general, there's one man who's kind of stolen all the headlines. Noah Lyles, no Joe. He's been pretty phenomenal all year when he's not holding in, going to the bathroom during a race. He's done some pretty incredible performances. He ran 1950 in Lausanne.
Yeah.
Yeah, which was pretty stellar. Can he go faster? I don't know. Given the time of year and that kind of thing, that's an interesting point as well. I wanted to talk about is, do you think times we should expect fast times here or not?
I think that a lot of sprinters prefer it to be hot than cold, but I mean, there's hot and then there's hot and then there's Doha.
I really think that's the best way to describe it.
But then again, like the stadium's obviously got the air conditioning thing going on, so
and it does work. It really, really does work.
So I think they'll be able to put it at a temperature that will be conducive to decent times. It's not going to be freezing. It's not going to be boiling. So yeah, hopefully it'll be just the right kind of temperatures for good sprint times.
Yeah, I think if we look at Lyle's last race in Brussels, he needed the toilet, but it was also quite cold. As John's just said, sprinters prefer warmth. It was cold, there was a bit of rain in the air, it was not ideal sprinting conditions.
Mm-hmm.
the guy needed to go to the toilet and he still ran 19.7, whatever it was. Yeah. I think he'll probably go faster than that. Whether he'll beat his season's best of 19.50, I'm not so sure, because that was in Lausanne almost perfect sprinting conditions.
Yeah, the
race was set up for him. I know he's another example of a sprinter who's gone back into a very heavy training block. He's spoken quite openly in press conferences about his coach Lance Brown and flogging him in training sessions. So we've probably not seen the best of him in the last 6 to 8 weeks, probably since US trials. So there's an unknown in terms of what sort of time he might produce, but I would be massively surprised if anyone could beat him to the gold medal.
It's also his first senior global champs. Like, he's done juniors, he's done US champs, but it's going to be another step up from what his experience. So doing 3 rounds and then trying to produce the fastest time of his life after all that, it'll be a challenge. But if he's surprised us loads of times in the past already, so maybe he's still got more to give.
As a group, they're pretty formidable as well. Got Noah, Shaunay, they're probably two of the best sprinters in the world, so I'm excited to see what they do as a whole. And the hurdles, I think out of all of them, the men's 400 metre hurdles is potentially one of the most exciting events that will actually be happening in Doha. Who would you go for out of Carsten, Benjamin, or outside smoker with McMaster or even Samba?
It's so hard to call, isn't it? It's so hard to call. So for some reason, and I've done this all season, I lean towards Benjamin. So when he and Carsten met in Zurich, I just thought Benjamin would get it right and would just win it on the line. It actually turned out to be a completely different race. I don't think either of them ran the perfect race. I know Ryan Benjamin was disappointed with the way he hit a hurdle on the back straight. It's a great unknown. There's just something within me that says Benjamin.
Okay, John?
At the start of the season, I was saying, wouldn't it be brilliant if someone like Cameron McMaster came through and just surprised all the big three? But just looking at how strong the big three are, I don't think there will be anyone from outside of those getting the gold medal. It's so close. I probably lean towards Carsten, simply because, he's undefeated this year. Mm-hmm. He's the fastest man in the world this year and is a proven championship performer. Rye is unknown, really, in global champs settings, so who knows how he'll get on. And Samba also goes there as an unknown quantity because he hasn't done the 4 hurdles since Shanghai.
How did he do in Shanghai?
Well, he beat Benjamin.
He won there, 47.27.
Yeah. And also, both Samba and Warholm are doubling up and doing the flat 4 as well.
That starts after
Course. And I don't suppose Samba will be doing the mixed relay.
I don't think Qatar has entered a team.
Okay.
I think Carsten's probably got the edge, but all it takes is a slight clip of the hurdle, mm-hmm. and Rye or Samba or whoever will be there ready to clean up. And I think the world record should go really. Like, if ever there's going to be a race set up for it, then.
Well, the women's 400 metre hurdles. Could the world record go again? I've heard people chatting a bit about maybe Sydney or Dalilo. I don't know. Either of them. They're both, I think it's fair to say they're both a cut above the rest of the field. Who's going to be the best? I don't really know. Obviously, Sydney is her first world championship. She obviously did the Rio Olympic Games. But this kind of, I don't know, Rio, I feel like Rio wasn't really, she wasn't there to be competitive, and it was just a learning experience. But this one, she's actually here as a contender to actually maybe win.
Yeah, I think in Zurich, it's pretty decisive for her win in Zurich at the final.
No, it really was.
And Mahmoud was kind of way back. But then you know that Mahmoud will probably be able to turn it on, and she'll be much better, I imagine, in Doha. But yeah, I think that's going to go right to land. It could be a replay of the 95 World Champs where the top two both went inside the previous world record. So maybe something like that could happen again.
Yeah, I think the rounds will have a big influence on how that final plays out. Mm-hmm. And I wonder whether Dalila holds the edge mentally over Sydney because she came through USA's through the round system.
Yeah.
Really, really competitive 400-meter hurdling scene amongst the women, well, hurdling scene in general in America, but really competitive in that particular event. And to run in a final where, again, it was cold, there was a bit of rain in the air, it wasn't perfect sprinting or hurdling conditions, to run in a final after going through the heats and produce a world record and to win so impressively, I think speaks of her class. She's the Olympic champion. Mm-hmm. She really is a classy runner. She was the Diamond League champion just last year. She got beat in a one-off race against Sydney in Zurich just a couple of weeks ago.
And Oslo, indeed. I think Sydney beat her every time on the circuit. It was just the USA's. Yeah, so I don't know. I really don't know. Either way, it's going to be quite exciting. I think the sprint events in general are going to be quite exciting. And what's particularly interesting with the sprint events, some of the innovations that are coming in around them. So we've got the new block cam thing, giving people a new perspective on how they can watch the race. But as well as that, lots of technological advancements as well. And especially in the event presentation side, there's some really, really exciting stuff. And a few days ago, myself and Tom actually caught up with Florian Weber, who is the head of event presentation for Doha 2019 and the IAAF, and here's what he had to say. Okay, so myself and Tom made a trip to the Khalifa Stadium ahead of the World Championships to catch up with the event presentation team, specifically Florian Weber, who is the head of event presentation at the IAAF. And the reason we're here is because there's a lot of interesting things that they're doing this year. And Florian, I wondered if you could talk us through some of that.
How much time do you have?
We've got all day. Hear me.
Perfect. Well, we actually, yeah, you're right. We're doing a lot here. I think let's start with the end of the competition, actually, when we celebrate our medalists at this stage, at the medal ceremony. Usually, you know, we are on the ground, we are on the field of play. This time we used the space we have here in the Khalifa Stadium. We built really something extraordinary for them, a specific stage just for the medal ceremonies, with a lot of LED screens, with a lot of special effects, with a lot of lights on it, to really create something unique. And if you have a chance, get up there, get this view, because it's just beautiful. You see the torch, this iconic hotel right next to it. You see the whole stadium, you see the whole crowd. For the spectators, it's great because they can get really close to the athletes as well. We have spectator seating all around the stage. So yeah, I'm really proud of that one. And so many other things, projection mapping being definitely one of the big things, but as I said, how much time do you have? It's
I know the projection mapping has been a bit of a top secret type of thing, but it sounds really, really exciting. Can you give us a brief outline of what we should expect with that?
Well, I think projection itself is quite known to people who watch sport events. So you have it now for quite a couple of years in every ceremony at bigger or major championships like Olympic Games, etc. What we did is we didn't make it part of the ceremonies, but we made it part of the sport. So we use it for presenting some select finals on the track every night from second day onwards to the last night, very last night on Sunday. And yeah, it's not so much secret, but because we're doing it the first time for the men's 100 meter final, it's we don't want to give away too much, but it's gonna be awesome and it's a lot of fun. We have doing it now for, well, basically testing for 5-6 days, and we're making really good progress. But there is a lot of work involved here. You have to align 100 projectors. So I don't know if you know your little projector from your meeting rooms. You know, if you put that into perspective, we have about 8,000 square meters we're projecting on, which is a huge canvas. And all those projectors have to be aligned just to the millimeter, because we want to hit the track lines, because they really, because they're white, they light up, they look like there is LED in the lanes, actually, or in the lines, in the white lines, so in the track marking. It's it's gonna be a lot of fun, but actually you have to see it.
And Tom, have you got anything to add?
Yeah, I just wanted to know, how might that look on television?
It's optimized for television. It's so the whole process over the last 2 years was, there was the idea, and then we worked through it together with television to make it right, because we need special cameras to make that right. We need to get these perspectives, so to basically have the visual effect of the visual 3D effect of stuff coming out of the track or hurdles falling over that are not really falling over. You have to get the right camera perspective because everything is rendered to that perspective. So it was a full cooperation with RWF Productions, and they were really helpful with, you know, getting the right camera positions in. They were really helpful in the process because we had to preview this. That's why we developed our virtual reality model, because this is nothing you can really judge upon if you just see a flat video on a screen. So yeah, they've been really helpful with that, and I can't wait to show the world.
It is really exciting, given obviously this is a sport, but it feels like you're really combining sport and performance of just like, it is like a show almost, in that like you're going to a rock concert or something like that.
Well, I think reality of it is that the people have a lot of choice what they want to see. But at the same time, we want to grow the sport. We want to really get into, well, we are part of the entertainment business in reality, and we want to create a stage that our athletes can take with pride, that they come out here and that actually this potentially 1% more, when you get this stage feeling, when you come in here and it feels like a proper show and you have the support from the audience and you really feel like a proper star, and they are stars, you know, they are really worth of all this. It just makes sense to go that way. It's not a field of play, it's a stage.
I love that. I'm going to use that quote. Right, okay, so Florian, thank you very much for talking to us. If you want to follow more on event presentation types of things, you can follow Florian on Twitter.
Oh yeah, I'm not very active on Twitter. Let's go to Instagram. Is that all right?
Oh, Instagram, yeah.
But it's both the same handles, at Sportmoderator.
And if you're not German, it's like Sports Moderator.
Sport Moderator, just without the S.
Yep, cool, love it. Right, best of luck, Florian.
Thanks very much, guys.
It's really interesting that there's going to be lots of new innovations within for Doha 2019. I am honestly really excited to see what they do. Particularly, I think Florian pinned the men's 100 meter final will be the first event where the major innovations will be happening, particularly from his standpoint. But all throughout with Seiko and Delta Trade, there's going to be lots of new things around the champs. But not just in terms of technological things. There's also new events this year. We kind of touched on it prior, but the mixed 4x4 will be making its world championship debut. What do you think about its position in the world champs?
I think it's good that new events are being put into the major champ schedule. You know, there's a viewpoint where, you know, all the classic championship events should remain the same and things. And to a degree, I kind of agree with that. But the sport's not going to move forward if it just completely stays the same. You know, I think world relays and junior youth events are good to try the disciplines that are massively different and then see which ones work and then gradually feed them up into the bigger events. And it does give some countries, like say if there are some nations who aren't strong enough to have, you know, a great women's 4x4 or a great men's 4x4, if they've got, you know, two or three good 400 metre runners overall, men and women, then they can be competitive. I mean, I think is it Bahrain have got it. Technically it's not a world record, there's various rules why it isn't, but they've got the fastest ever mixed relay time. It's like 3:11 or something. That'll most likely be broken in Doha here by maybe US, Poland, some of the other teams. But yeah, I think it's got the potential to be a well represented event globally. I think there's a lot of countries who could, in theory, contend for big titles.
I think that's the key point from this, because a lot of us generally don't really know who will contend. I obviously, I feel like the USA are going to be probably the ones to beat, but behind them, it's really, really open with who actually could sneak a medal. And because it's so early on in the championships, it's going to feel, no, it'd be weird having a relay so early on, but at the same time, it kind of, I don't know, perhaps gives the championships a new flavour.
I'm really looking forward to it. Mm-hmm. I remember when they first introduced it at the World Youth Championships in Cali in 2015, and the finish to that race, I can't remember the names of the athletes, and I apologise to them, but there was a battle for second and third between South Africa and Canada. And it was a South African lad running down a Canadian girl on the line, and they both had to be stretchered off the track. And They were fine in the end. I think maybe a case of 2015 Van Niekerk struck with lactic acid. But it's that sort of matchup that I think the event is designed for and the crowds will respond to in the stadium and at home. I think when a female runner is set up with a massive lead and a man is chasing it down, it is very new. You know, for traditional athletics fans, it will arrest the senses almost, because you don't really know how any single leg is going to transpire, never mm-hmm. mind an entire race. But I think you're completely right. Teams are going to be taking it incredibly seriously because it's going to be in the Rio Olympics next year.
Yeah,
you know, there's an Olympic medal up for grabs in 12 months' time. So it's not a sideshow. It's not a gimmick. This is a serious medal opportunity for teams, and as you say, for teams that might not traditionally have a look in the relay setup. So I'm really excited to see how it'll play out.
And it'll be different. Like in Yokohama, it's different because it was only a 2-day schedule. And athletes, well, teams had to have, you know, 4x4 squads for the men's 4x4, women's 4x4, and a mixed, all within a 2-day schedule with heats and finals. The quality in the final of the mixed 4x4 is maybe compromised a bit because teams wanted to save their better athletes for the single-sex races. But that's probably less of an issue here. Okay, you've still got the individual four mm-hmm. and four hurdles for some, maybe. But there's enough of a gap between... Well, the mixed 4x4 and then the men's and women's 4x4 later on to be able to have decent strength teams in all of the relay events.
Yeah, I just quite like the idea of Sydney McLaughlin chasing down a bloke in the final straight of the mixed relay. But maybe we'll see that, maybe we won't. Either way, it's going to be interesting. Moving away from the track, the field has got plenty to offer in Doha. I'm thinking particularly... I think particularly the men's shot put is going to be a really, really exciting one. Again, it's one of those, similarly to the men's four hurdles, maybe the world record could go, and there's a lot of men vying for that position as well. I'd probably lean towards Tom Walsh defending his title. I don't know.
I would.
Yeah.
He's been incredibly consistent this season, Tom Walsh, not just across competitions, but within competitions. I think in Paris, he went over 22 metres with his first four throws, and admitted afterwards that in his penultimate two, pushed too hard, but for the fact that he was able to put four 22 metre throws back to back, it was incredibly impressive. When just a couple of years ago, if we'd seen one 22 metre plus throw in any competition, we'd all be, you know, dancing around in the press tribune with excitement. So I lean towards Walsh for that title. But as you say, it's an incredibly deep field. Mm-hmm. I think Ryan Krauser has the longest throw in the world this year and has to be also considered a contender.
Darlan Romani,
who broke the Diamond League record in
Stanford. Yeah,
he's enjoyed an incredible season. And then behind him,
Daryl
Hill, who won the Diamond League title a couple of years ago. There is so much pedigree. There's so much experience in that field, and mm-hmm. I think it will require a hefty throw, probably something 22-60 and above to win that one, possibly even a world record. We'll see about that. It stands at 23-12. It's a big effort.
I think there's a chance of someone throwing 22 metres and not even getting a medal.
Really?
Yeah, but that's never happened before in any competition. Like, there's never been four guys thrown beyond 22, but I think it could happen in Doha. Like, I think 9 of the guys on the entry list have thrown 22 metres at some point in... Well, 8 of them have done it this year. Mm-hmm. There's another, I think, Stanek.
Actually, Conrad. Conrad is also an outside chance.
He's really coming to... In his last four competitions
in a
row...
Yeah, that's what we're talking about with timing your season to perfection. He seems like he's one of those who's really...
He started well. I think in Rome he set a PB through like 21.90s there. Then his form dipped a bit. He didn't come close to that for a while, but then four competitions in a row he's set PB, so he's definitely coming into form at the right time. Walsh is a great championship competitor. Krauser as well.
I think for Conrad that outdoor 22 metre mark was a bit of a monkey on his back. I think a first Diamond League win in Rome was a notable achievement for him, and he'd thrown 22 metres, I think 22 metres dead indoors.
That's right,
but for him to break that mark outdoors,
mm-hmm.
those shot putters, they're a pretty tight knit group. They like to rib each other, and I know that some of the guys used to kind of, you know, give him a bit of a poke in the ribs and say, "You've never thrown 22 metres outdoors, though, have you?" So I think with that pressure now released, you're right, he could be a medal contender.
Yeah, I think the Men's Shopper particularly is such an interesting group of people. It's such a global event in terms of the area representation from all over.
Yeah.
And I think that's really something that we can be proud of within our sport generally, and how the different... I think also where you're from really depends on how you prepare for these championships. Prior to recording this, myself and Tom around the Diamond League circuit have been chatting to different athletes. Brandon Stark from Australia, Akani Simbini from South Africa, Naota Tobi of Japan, and Shanika Ricketts of Jamaica. All of them have had different routes to how they got to Doha, different trials at different times, dealing with all these different things, time zones, heat, not heat. And yeah, we caught up with them ahead of the championships.
But it's like, it's that thing that like old people always get up really early, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
Like, it's just that gradual shift.
They also go to bed early.
The night before I travelled here, I went to bed at like 9:30.
Yeah.
All right. Yep. When did your season start?
My first comp was in February.
Outdoors.
Yep. So. Yeah, being from Australia, it doesn't really... like people think it's harder, but we just have outdoors when some of the people have indoors. So we just kind of do outdoors and outdoors. So my first comp was in February. Probably shouldn't have jumped because of my back. I had a bit of a back issue. Then we had to get that sorted, and then my first trip overseas was in May. It's, you know, it's kind of been a normal long season. I'm kind of used to long seasons. I had a very, very long season last year, and still managed to jump all right. So I'm happy to do the same thing this time and kind of keep jumping well.
But last season you kind of began with the championships.
Yeah.
So it's kind of been flipped on its head.
Yeah, well... last year, my first comp was in December of 2017, and I went all the way through to Continental Cup. So that was huge. But yeah, I did start with Com Games, and that obviously went quite well. And then there were obviously other comps that I wanted to do well in. I hadn't really performed well at Diamond Leagues before, so to kind of go there and pressure free really and perform, which was really cool. But yeah, this year is a bit. Quite different to finish on the biggest comp of the season. I'm ready for it. My back's managing quite well, so did a pretty good performance at the Diamond League final. So yeah, things are going well.
Great. Well, good luck.
Sweet. Thank you.
As well.
Cheers.
Okay, cool. Akani, thank you for chatting with me. So we're doing features with lots of different athletes about their journey to Doha. You've got quite a good history with the World Championships. You actually made the final back in 2013.
Yeah.
As a 19-year-old? How was that?
For me, it was an amazing experience, you know, being able to run against guys that I idolized and guys that I looked up to, and just being able to be there and say that, okay, I actually ran against these guys and I had to admit I met these guys, you know. It was really great, and it's brought me to a place where I'm more of a mature athlete, because I've gone from such a young athlete to an athlete that's 25 years old, and I've been in the game for a while, you know, and I've been running against the guys at the top for a while as well.
No, it's really awesome. And also in London 2017, you finished fifth, not that far from a medal. I'm guessing medals are on your radar for this year then.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I've been finishing fifth from Olympics 2016, then champion, the World Champs 2017, I finished fifth again. So now it's literally medals, and just trying to be on the podium as the championships come.
Arguably, you've been really consistent this year as well in that below 10-second barrier. You must be feeling quite good going into it.
Yeah, definitely. Consistency was the plan for the year. You know, we have to be consistent as much as we can, building up to Doha so that we can peak at Doha and not have a double peak of the year. And I feel like my coaches have said it spot on, as we're feeling like we're getting there, we're getting to our best shape. And, you know, once we get to Doha, we'll be running really well and running really fast so I can be on the podium.
I think that's what's really interesting, especially for South African guys, because you're in the Southern Hemisphere. How differently do you prepare for your season? Because your trials are really early. They're like April, aren't they?
Yeah. So for us, it's like we kind of make sure that we peak in the European season, but we're ready for our trials in a sense. Like just say you're going to trials, but it's kind of training, you mm-hmm. know? And the competition for me at home is not that really high. So I can go there from a full week of hard training and still compete and still be fine and still win. And then continue as if I'm going, still going to go on to Europe.
And what have you made of this season in general? Obviously, it's quite strange having the World Championships at the very end. It doesn't really happen. How have you found it?
I was actually talking to the guys now at lunch and we were saying like it's so weird because it feels like tonight is the last day of the season. Mm-hmm. And it's actually like kind of the beginning of champs, you know. And for us, it's weird because we normally used to having champs before the Diamond League final, and now it's the other way around. So you have your final for the league, then you have the champs later on. So it's kind of weird, but we do what we can. We try to be the best we can wherever we need to be.
And what events are you doing in Doha?
So I'm gonna be doing the 100. I might do the 200 because I've qualified for the 200, but then that's gonna depend on the federation. But the 100 meter for sure, that's where my eyes are at.
Awesome. All right. Thank you very much, Carney.
See, thank you very much.
So, Nyota, you've had a really big year so far. You jumped really well indoors, and now we're in the outdoor season. You're in the Diamond League finals, and now you're on the way to Doha. How are you feeling?
Actually, I feel I'm getting better. So, I hope to make my season best and personal best in Doha.
And when were the Japanese championships?
Japanese championships was end of June.
End of June. So they were quite a long way before Doha.
Yeah.
Have you found it difficult to prepare?
Yes, actually this year World Championships will be in end of season, October. It is a little bit difficult, but I have time to prepare for that. So I hope to make my best performance in.
And Japanese athletics is getting stronger and stronger all the time. You have the sprinters especially, and you also have good long jumpers as well. Where is this coming from?
I think the biggest factor is next Olympic Games. Now Japanese athletics is getting exciting and everyone make great record, I think.
And what do you think the Japanese team will do in Doha?
I think now Japanese team is quite good, so maybe some medal.
Who from? Are you going to get a medal?
Of course, I hope that.
Anybody else? Maybe the men's relay team? Or?
Yes, men's relay is quite strong now, and also men's long jump and some long distance also.
Amazing. Thank you for talking to me and best of luck in Doha.
Thank you very much.
So Shanika, obviously you've just won the Diamond League. Didn't know.
Still sinking in.
It was an amazing, amazing result. It was a definite like hold my beer moment as you were coming down the runway. It's quite a strange year this year generally with the World Championships being so late. How have you kind of dealt with that?
As you say, it's a very challenging year this year because we've never had a season that extends up until October. So my coach, Curly Ricketts, my agent, Norman Peart, and my entire team, we just sit down and kind of discuss how we'll handle this year and make preparations to make sure that we're peaking at the right time, because you don't want to be jumping well early and then later on you start to fizzle out. So we had to take it very serious at the beginning of the season and make sure that we make preparations so that we can progress throughout the season.
It's difficult for Jamaicans as well because your championships are fairly early in comparison to Doha.
Yeah.
Did you have to double peak?
Not really. Luckily for me, I only have Kimberly Williams that's really close by. So we didn't really have to peak to compete at the trials, but for other athletes who are not exactly in my event, they had to peak, so it's kind of a disadvantage somewhat. So it's very tricky, and I hope everyone can respond going into the Doha Championships.
And what's the Jamaican team looking like for Doha?
I would say pretty solid. I love the way the field events are looking this year, especially as a field event rep. Yes, we're really looking for great results in Doha.
Yeah, well, you've got quite a few of you now. You've got Daniil in the shot put, Vedric in their discus as well. Congratulations. And hopefully Jamaican field eventing keeps on going up.
I know. Thank you so much for having me.
But let's talk about the Maltese. Both of them are, I think, different competitions in their own right. Let's start with the heptathlon. It feels like it's potentially a two-horse race, and then the rest of the pack are kind of behind the main two. John, you know way more about all the stats and that kind of thing.
We can see the cogs in his brain. Right.
How many hundreds of points is Nafta?
Just seeing numbers in front of me. obviously on PB she's a couple hundred points ahead of KJT. But I was looking at it recently, and there's actually only been, if you think KJT at her current level, actually scored 6,800 this year.
Mm-hmm.
There's only been one occasion where TM has scored over 6,800, and that was with a 7,000 score in 2017. Yeah. But she's consistently been at the 6-8 level at major champs.
Mm-hmm.
So if KJT can kind of match that as well, and there's been a good few occasions where KJT has set PBs or seasons best at major champs, she's a good championship performer. So if she can kind of match that level, I think it'll be a really, really close contest. Obviously, Tiam has, well, she's improved massively in the long jump this year, so she's got an extra bank of points there on
that
top of
mental.
Yeah, on top of the bank of points that she'll probably bag in the high jump, in the shot put. The javelin is still a question mark, though. She said in Brussels, I think, that her elbow injury that hampered her in Gotsis has improved, but we won't know. She's not done the javelin since then, so we won't really know. And if KJT is performing well and is applying the pressure, then it's going to be all the more difficult for Tiam to relax, because like relaxation is key in the javelin. So often you see athletes who, when the pressure's on and the need to pull out a big throw, they just tense up and it all goes to pot. So it'll be really interesting if the pressure's on during that second day.
Yeah, that said, we were talking about this over dinner yesterday, weren't we? The pressure was on Tiam in Berlin at the European Championships.
True.
In that javelin throw.
And she pulled it out of the back.
But that's the thing. So Kat actually, because I interviewed her shortly after the European Champs, and we were speaking about it, and she said even after Nafi had thrown her second round throw, which was like 53 metres or something, and she was still a sizable chunk ahead of Kat, but Kat was like, I still think I can beat her. Mm. Given the 800 meter strength, and Tiam is perhaps a bit weaker in the 800, but then Nafi bashed out 57 meters, was it?
Or maybe even 58.
Was 58. It? Either way, it was really, really far. And everybody was like, "Okay, so that's that," which is great. And you know, Nafi is a brilliant competitor. She is probably one of my favourite athletes around, behind Li Jiaogong. I really hope that, depending on who wins, it's not because either one messes up.
Yeah,
it's
true.
Because they had an absolute smasher of a competition.
Yeah.
If you were to say who's going to get the bronze medal, I think that's an interesting...
Ooh, Zsenia Krishan has been...
Yeah, the Hungarian. Yeah. Good shout.
I think she's had a nice little breakthrough this year. So I think, between her and Erica Bergard, maybe.
Yeah. What about Anouk Vetter? She
got bronze
in 2017.
A couple of years ago, didn't she?
Yeah.
She won the European title in 2016 as well. She is a championship performer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Has she posted the score this year?
No, that's the thing. So she hasn't done a heptathlon. She's done a few like individual events, and they've all been not far off, you know, her best mark. So if she can, assuming she's had some injury problems that's prevented her from doing a heptathlon, if she can hold it together, then yeah, she'll definitely be there, I think.
Bugard?
Mm.
Another contender.
She's an interesting performer, right? She does well in the US, at the US Champs. It'll be interesting if she can, because I don't know how it got to. How did she do this year?
Where was she in Gotsis? I think she scored, actually the season's best, I think, came at the US Champs, didn't it? She won that for like 6,600 something. can't remember how she did and got to, so I think she wasn't far off the top.
Yeah, I think probably I'd probably go for Bugard, to be honest with you. In the men's side, though, I feel like it's perhaps a one-man show at the front. If he can
express himself.
If he can express himself 100%. Yeah, for those of you who don't know that reference, Kevin Mayer, when he fouled out in the long jump in Berlin Europeans last year, he just wanted to express himself and try and go as far as he could, basically. But sadly, I think the record kind of played with his mind a little bit, as opposed to actually going for the gold medal. Now he's got the world record, though, with Doha. Is our numbers and records going to be playing on his mind, do you think?
From I heard mutterings the other day that he's going for the world record again.
Okay.
But then I've also heard that he feels like he's only capable of doing one decathlon this year, like fitness wise. So if that's the case, you'd think maybe he'd play it a bit more careful,
mm-hmm.
And do just enough to win. But then again, maybe he thinks I've already won one world title. So let's see if I can win another with the world record and just go all out in every event and express himself.
And behind him, Tom, you've got a particular favourite.
Nicholas.
Yeah.
Yes, Nicholas Carl, an old friend of mine. And in fact, Ashton Eaton, the former world record holder, who, not necessarily a mentor to Nicholas, but did run a kind of sort of training camp in 2016 with Nicholas and a few other young athletes, will be in attendance. So, I don't know. What will Nicholas Carl do? I don't know. He's still incredibly young. He performed incredibly well at the European Championships. That was probably his breakout championships.
Became fourth?
Fourth. And he wasn't at all disappointed with that result in the end. Mm-hmm. He had the world lead for a brief time early on this year.
In the European under-23s, was it? Or
actually, he didn't have the world lead, because I think Warner got the world lead in Sydney, 8-7, something. But yeah, he scored a PB, or two PBs back-to-back.
And that javelin.
And yeah, it's the javelin. He's another one that I can remember from Cali. He won the World Youth Championships back in 2015, and I think he was third going into the javelin. And just, again, it was like Tian.
Yeah.
Maybe it was like, okay, competition over. You know, that's where you can pull it back. And because it's his specialist event, I think.
And he's German.
And he's German, of course, he's German. I think having that banker.
Mm-hmm. Is it a hindrance, though, as well? Because it puts a lot of pressure on a particular event. I don't know.
I think in some ways it probably puts more pressure on his opponents, because they know in every event leading up to that they're going to think, oh god, and we've still got Carl's javelin to come. Yeah. So they know that up until then, whatever the scores are, whatever the positions are, it's all going to change after the javelin. I mean, even if Carl underperforms and throws, you know, 5-10 metres shorter than what he's used to doing, it's still probably a far enough throw to move up the leaderboard wherever he is at that point. Because he threw, was it 77 at the European under-23s, and then at the Berlin Istaf meeting. I think just under 79. But I think he's, by the sounds of it, he still wants more. He feels like there's still more there. I think he's probably, obviously he's really close to the 80 metre barrier. So yeah, I think he'd like to throw that.
And a word for Lyndon Victor.
And also Pierce Lepage.
Pierce Lepage, fairly new to the athletic scene when he took up decathlon. He struggled with injuries, I think, because of the burden of training and competing over 10 events. But he's someone whose resilience has improved. He's tall, he's filled out his frame, he's grown up as a human being as much as an athlete. He could be someone knocking on the door for a medal. But I think you're right, going back to the gold medal prospects, it could well be Kevin versus Kevin for that one. Behind him, a scramble of Germans and
Damian Warner as well.
Canadians, I mean. Pierce and
Damian Warner. We can never rule out Damian.
Yeah,
he's always there.
Solid, absolutely.
Silver, probably for me. Maybe, I don't know. Moving swiftly on from the decathlon, men's triple jump is also going to be pretty good. We've had some 18 metre jumps bashed out, and
I would love f- to see something like we saw in 2015 at Beijing,
yeah,
two guys duking it out over 18 metres. I think there's the potential for that to happen as well,
definitely,
with Christian Taylor and Will Clay.
And also in the women's, we've got, okay, it's more of a one-woman show, but Yulimar Rojas, my God, 15 metres, 41, was it?
Yeah.
That's huge. Yeah. That's absolutely huge, and about 50 centimetres further than anybody else has jumped.
Actually, but funny, I've talked about, I mentioned earlier that the 95 world champs where two women went under the 400 metre hurdles world record. Mm-hmm. Also in 95, both triple jump world records were broken. So it'll be a complete 95 throwback with, two triple jump world records maybe.
Okay. Any other field events that you guys would highlight to be one to watch?
Well, the women's long jump could be particularly competitive as
Mihambo
well. Mihambo dominated this year, I think, unbeaten outdoors. She's got the longest jump in the year, but come to a championships, Brittany Reese is just a different animal. So
the LGA beast,
exactly that. So I think Mihambo goes into that one as the favourite, but if she doesn't perform to an absolute best, you know, she might need to jump 7:10 to win that, because I expect Brittany Reese to jump over 7 meters, and when she's in the business, when she's jumping over 7 meters, she normally goes, you know, beyond 7:10. So that's definitely one to keep an eye on. It's more of a battle rather than an exhibition, and it could be a battle, you know, over 7 meters.
As dominant as Mihambo's been, she's not used to being in this position where, you know, she's going into big champs as the overwhelming favourite.
That's what I was thinking.
The pressure to deal with as well, whereas Brittany Reese, you know, as long as she's been around and as good as she's been at major champs, quite often she goes in as a bit of an underdog, which sounds weird for, you know,
I feel like she sets up
someone
for
who's
herself.
Got so
she
many
knows
gold
what
medals.
She's doing.
She's a hustler.
But the thing with Mihambo, actually, in terms of mentality, one of the things that she's spoken about this year that's changed was she went on a yoga retreat in the close season where she didn't speak for 14 days. And, you know,
I like the sound of that.
Only rang bells. You know,
get away from your children.
but that has produced the results that we've seen this season. Obviously, she improved vastly last year. I think
European title.
Yeah.
And she went over 7 metres last year.
Yeah, she won her first time in Birmingham.
She was close.
She was close. I'll give you that.
I'm not the stat man, I will admit that.
So she's made conscious adjustments to her mental approach to competition. So yes, you're right, it will be interesting to see how she fares up as a favourite, but given what she's achieved this year and the way that she's achieved it, you know, psychologically,
I wonder if she'll be doing like yoga poses in between her jumps. Like,
I would love that.
Downward dog, and what's that tree on?
Tree?
Something to do with a tree.
Just do the long jump.
I think she seems to be on a good upward trajectory. European area champion, maybe world champion, then who knows, Olympic Games next year. It's going in a good direction for her with Tokyo on the horizon. Also want to highlight Maria Lesetskini in the high jump. Obviously, she's been such a dominant force, and it feels like the same old story. But recently, in Minsk, at the European the match between Europe and USA, Levchenko jumped 202, which is not messing around. And she beat Lesetskini quite convincingly, I think. What do we reckon?
Well, just going off the back of what we were saying about psychological approaches going into major champs. I've seen recent years Lesetskini has gone in, and I think almost, maybe not all, but some of her competitors have been a bit psychologically defeated beforehand, just thinking, hey, I'm up against such a dominant athlete. Whereas, based on what's happened in the past month or so, maybe some of them have started to realise that, you know, she's beatable, and Levchenko's coming into good form at the right time. So, yeah, I'll be interested to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I think Lesetskini will have to have something of an off day to be defeated, because I think a par clearance for her is probably something around 202. If she doesn't clear two and above, I think we're all scratching our heads and wondering why not. Whereas with the rest of the field, Levchenko included, if they do clear 2 metres, it's more of a wow moment.
Yeah.
So Lesetskini does go in as the favourite, but you are right, I think a lot of athletes were kind of beaten before the competition had even begun when facing such a formidable rival. but she's looked beatable. She was beaten.
Mm-hmm. And did she have like some strapping on her knee as well in recent competitions? I don't know how serious, mate. Maybe it's just a precautionary thing, but yeah, she's had something on her knee.
Okay, well, we'll see. I want to talk.
I think that's Fala the
Fala the Falcon. Fala just the chirping on the outside of our of my balcony. Go away, Fala. Anyway, can we talk about walking, John? You're like a walking master. As in, you know a lot of what's going on in the walks.
Just walk everywhere.
You walk every day.
I do.
Unlike me, who's just like rolling around the floor, getting to places. Anyway.
They're all going to be pretty competitive. Sorry, yeah, all the race walks are going to be pretty competitive. And one of them, the women's 20k walk, Glenda Morjon, is that how you pronounce it, Tom? You're the Spanish expert.
Morjon.
Glenda, I'll call her.
Glenda,
she's still under 20. She leads the world list. She, in her first ever 20k race this year, she clocked like 1:25, which is a world under 20 record. And she beat the best race walkers in the world. She beat Yang Jiayi, who won the world champs last year, Liu Hong, world Olympic champion, and some of the best, you know, European and South American race walkers. Obviously, as I said, it was a debut at that distance, so mm-hmm. you don't know whether it was a beginner's luck, if that happens in 20K. But it's going to be a completely different experience here. Not just the fact that it's a major championships, there's the conditions to look at as well. And, yeah, all the other race walkers in the world are going to want to be at their best.
Mm-hmm.
And as great as it was that she won in La Coruña, I think the others weren't that far behind. I think two other women clocked 1:25 something. So it was pretty close as well. But if she does win, she could be one of the first athletes born this millennium, you know, from the year 2000, who wins a senior world title, which makes me feel so old. But I mean, there's a few in that position, like Jakob Ingebrigtsen.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. A question would be to you guys, because I feel like at the World Championships, you kind of get the first chance to see some of these young athletes actually competing on like a proper official stage. Everybody's at a level playing field. Who would you say you're most excited to see compete?
Certainly Ingebrigtsen.
Yeah.
After his stunning performance in Berlin last year, 15 and 5,000 metre champion there, whether he can defeat the top guns in either event this time round, I'm not so sure. But it's as you say, it's a test against the best in the world in a championship format. It's not under 20s, it's not under 18s, it's not an area championships. This is everyone all in. So he's certainly someone I want to watch and learn how he fares. Then Getnet Wally, who won the Diamond League title in the 3K steeplechase. How old is he, John?
He's under 20 as well.
He's still under 20.
He's 19. He made the World Champs final as a 17-year-old, like in London. He was like 8th or 9th there, I think. But yeah, he's still under 20.
Yeah.
But he set a senior Ethiopian record this year.
And somebody said that the men's steeplechase could be a world record that could go, potentially.
I mentioned that it's beatable. Whether it will go with these championships, I very much doubt. I think the men's steeplechase this year has been one of those where, unlike in previous years, where most recently Kipruto kind of dominated most races that he performed in. No one's really stood out. Soufiane El Bakkali has run incredibly well and picked up a couple of wins on the Diamond League, but got beaten in Brussels in the final. Just didn't look to have the sprint finish.
And in Rabat as well, he didn't look great in Rabat either. I don't know whether he got a bit too excited in that race, but well, that
Benjamin hard. Keegan as well. Like there's the three of them have had some great head-to-heads. I think there's been three races that all three of them have been in, and they've come away with like one win each. So there's no real kind of dominant figure in that event.
All right, so. For both of you, so you're saying Ingebrigtsen?
I'm saying, well, in terms of an athlete I'm excited to see, yes, Ingebrigtsen, but also Gennett Wally. Purely, there's more into it than just his youth. Kenya are traditionally so dominant in steeplechase, not just on the men's side, but also on the women's. for an Ethiopian to win that event, I know would cause a minus ruckus in East Africa. So I'm just fascinated to see how that one plays out. Uh-huh. And with Kipruto coming back into the equation as well, I think he's probably raced within himself when he has run this year. Never really in contention for a win, but if he's in shape, he's set, and in a championship race, he's probably in with a chance. So it'd be fascinating to see how that one plays out, and whether Ethiopia can get one over on the long-time rivals.
He's kind of lucky in a way that the event isn't too, you know, there's not too many guys running, you know, close to 8 minutes. It's a bit like Bashim in the high jump, you know, he's coming back to form, and luckily for him, no one's producing massive jumps. So yeah, for those two defending champions who've had a bit of a rocky time of late, it's set up nicely. I mean, not for them to win necessarily, although it could happen, but hopefully they can just do themselves justice more than anything and feel like they've expressed themselves.
A young one I'm really excited to see, John, a young one I'm really excited to see is actually Ronex, who he was a rising star nominee at the IWF Awards last year, but he's just been pretty incredible. I mean, me and Tom, we watched him in Stockholm doing the 10K, and he was incredible, and I think perhaps he's one of the favourites, maybe with Joshua Cheptegei, I don't know.
Yeah, he's up there. Is it Hagos Gebrehiwot? I think he's got the world lead. But yeah, I mean, there's a few of them who is going to make that 10K really
exciting. Kajelcha's in that 10,000, isn't he?
That's right, yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. Because he didn't make the team in the five, the Ethiopians.
Yeah, the Ethiopians have got a mad group of like 15, 5K runners. Yeah. And like Berega, Tefera.
Yeah.
And they're all in Doha, right?
Yeah, I think Berega and Gebrehiwot have been named in both the 5K and the 10K. Kajelka just in the 10K, I think.
And they're all so young as well, which is what equally puzzling.
Telahun Bekele, he's incredibly young, isn't he? And he won the five in Rome.
Is Haile Bekele here?
That's him, yeah. Oh, Telahun Haile Bekele.
Literally the best distance runner.
Anyone's been named to win major titles, it's him.
Right, love it. Okay.
And of course, there's a bit of a void with Farah not being in any of the fields. Yeah. It's the first time there's not been Mo Farah in that 5 or 10 field since 2005, I think. So it's there to be taken on by one of those young athletes that we just named.
Let's see it. Okay. And then perhaps any closing thoughts, middle distance, men's eight, women's eight?
Women's eight, we're looking at RG, I think.
I think so, yeah.
It's a pretty open field behind RG as well.
It could be a US double in both the eights, like RG and then Donovan Brazier. He looked so good when he ran that 142.
That Zurich race was incredible. 800
metre run.
And that photo of him and Nigel in the finishing straight. Bless Nigel Amos. I don't know if anybody has seen it. I think Lavia Nielsen shared it on Twitter. After the meet had finished in Zurich, they projected the all the races on their big screen in the athlete dining hall. And when the race came on, people were videoing him. And it's on Lavia Nielsen's Twitter. And all the athletes are just rolling around the floor, Nigel included, just laughing at himself because of how ridiculously fast he went off. And you can see Luvo Manyonga like rolling around on the floor laughing. It's pretty funny.
It was a funny race and like funny seeing that kind of video as well, but you kind of hope that Nigel will maybe adopt a bit of a smarter approach.
Well, he went out faster than Radisha did when he broke the world record, so you got to kind of scratch your head there. And then
you've got to dream. That's what I admire about Nigel. Yeah. That he's the man who clung on to Radisha in 2012. So he's a competitor. I love him for it. Yeah. I think we should touch, whilst we're talking middle distance, the women's 15, because that's another pretty open one.
Sifan, if she competes, I just
want to know which events she's going to do. It's what everyone's been talking about.
Come on, Sifan. She is a fave of mine. Just like her attitude is great, like on the podium of the world indoors, hand on hip, don't care, whatever. Like, I love her. She is great. if she does 10, if she does 5, if she does 15, yeah, I don't know if anybody can beat her.
Whatever event she does, I mean, she'll probably win the hammer if she enters that. She probably
Anita's
is entered.
Anita's not there,
yeah,
so.
Yeah. It's wide open. But yeah, I think whichever of the events she's entered to do, whichever one she lines up for, then yeah, she'll.
Yeah.
She's going to be a major contender.
Yeah. And then also in the women's 15, Shelby Houlihan, yeah. Jenny Simpson, mm-hmm. Laura Muir. Mm-hmm. Laura Muir's a bit of a question mark. She's been pretty not. Well, she's had a calf injury, was it?
She's missed the last couple of weeks of competition, certainly. I don't know how that's affected the training.
I know she went back out to South Africa to do some warm weather training.
And there's Faith Kipyegon as well. I mean, she's only done a couple of races, but they've both been really impressive.
Yeah.
So again, she's had a couple of niggling injuries that kept her from racing during the middle of the season, but the win in Stanford and then the win at the Kenyan Trials, like running 4:03 at altitude.
Also one to watch as well, Gabby Stafford of Canada.
Mm. Oh, totally, yeah. She's
an amazing
personal best. Yeah. but she trains with Laura Muir.
Yeah, and Gemma Riki, who's also in the women's 15 as well, who won the 15-800 double at the European Under 23s. Yeah, so she could be an interesting one. Maybe she'll make the final.
I'm looking forward to that race so much. It was probably...
Your highlight?
It's probably the highlight of 2017.
Mm. Oh, it was so stacked,
I'm incredibly excited for that women's 15.
Yeah, I think I agree. Another great race from London was women's steeplechase.
For all the wrong and right reasons at the same time.
Yeah, drama definitely was present there. Chepkoech will should be able to count the laps right this time, when to do the water jump, fingers crossed. But Hiven Kieng, the Kenyan, she's potentially
I think Chepkoech's best chance of winning is to do what she's done on the circuit, which is to take things out fast. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think a few of her races have been quicker than world record pace. She's never quite stuck at it, but it's given her enough of a lead to win comfortably. The one time that she didn't do that in Oslo, I think it was, she was beaten by Nora Jurita, but she's not even going to be in Doha. So, but I think even so, the fact that she was beaten will give confidence to the other athletes.
Okay.
And yeah, if it is slow and tactical, Hyvin Kieng has got a brilliant finish. Emma Coburn is obviously going to be up there too. It could be a close race.
I think you're right there, John. I think it could be a close race because of the championship style.
Yeah.
Chepkoech, in these paced races that we've seen on the Diamond League all season, has gone out with a plan every time, and that is to run the first kilometre basically as fast as she can, break the pack, and cruise a bit for the middle kilometre and then step on it again and then try and hold on over the final lap. She won't be able to do that at the championships because you've got to manage a race rather than just drop the hammer. She won't have a pacemaker. Caroline Twigong, fellow Kenyan, has been pacing her all season long. She's not in the team. She's not there. So
outside is Celafine, though, I reckon could be a good shout. Celafine Chespol.
Well, so Kieng, Chepkoech and Chespol cross the line hand in hand at the Kenyan trials. So I think any one of those three has the potential to win. I think as well we might be looking at a sweep. I would like to say that Emma Coburn and Gesa Krause with their closing speed will stand a chance. But I think we might be looking at a Kenyan sweep.
I love a sweep. Moving away from that, I think final thoughts quickly. Relays 4x1 men. Who's winning?
USA, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No Lyles, naughty back straight. I reckon.
USA should win it, but I think, you know, as long as they can get the stick around.
Japan, Brazil, GB, maybe.
I'd love Japan to win. There's some fellow statos who keep kind of spreadsheets on all of the USA's relay blunders. And the US men's 4x1, they've had a lot of blunders. But, you know, in terms of talent and speed, they've got all the resources there to produce a winning team. But I mean, Japan have... They've got 2 sub-10 guys this year, which they've never had before, so they're quicker than they have been potentially. And I was just going to say slick changeovers, but then I remembered what happened with Yokohama. So I don't want to jinx it. But
please go and watch that video. The Japanese team is incredible. Women's side then, 4x1.
Yeah, that's going to be quite, because Germany's got the world lead, haven't they?
Yeah, I'm a little bit sceptical about that 41-60, just because they've done it before in Germany. They ran, I think they ran pretty much identical time.
They ran a bit quicker. 2016, they ran like 41-62 or 61, I think. Yeah. That was before Rio. They were half a second slower in Rio. I think they were fourth or fifth in the final. But when you look at their championship record, they're always solid. Like, they're always running low 42s.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think many teams are going to run quicker than that this year. Jamaica haven't really got it together. Again, they've got the speed, but whether they've practiced. And USA, as you mentioned earlier, they've not got the same depth that they have done in previous years. So it's wide open. Obviously, Britain as well, world tour medalist, European champs.
I'd probably put a soft favourite tag on the GB team.
Mm-hmm.
Even from a non-patriotic standpoint, but with Dina being in such incredible form, and then a lot of the other British women have been saying personal best recently, and their relay pedigree, they I think they've won a medal every major for the last however many years now. They're pretty solid, and with the Jamaicans, you don't know.
Yeah.
They had a pretty shocking 4x2 in Yokohama.
The thing that plays in Britain's and Germany's favour is that they've got the same smaller pool, so it's like maybe 6 to 8 athletes who they use year in, year out. Whereas in USA and Jamaica, maybe to some degree, they've got a much larger pool, and they only go with the athletes who finish, you know, top of the trials.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of these athletes before this year, they've probably never ran with each other on relay. They've got a lot of relay practice from collegiate circuits, but working as a team is another thing, and that might not be as well drilled.
So 4x4s, men, probably USA pretty easily. You've only got Norman, Benjamin, Curley. I don't see anybody.
And Vernon Norwood, if he gets picked for it, I think he was fourth at the trials. Rye Benjamin to come in if they need.
Strother as well.
Nathan Strother performed incredibly indoors.
On the women's side, again, I feel like it's a USA.
Well, what I find funny talking about the 4x4s, like when you look at their qualifying times. For the US men and women and the Jamaicans, their qualifying times were set by under 20 teams.
Really?
Yeah, at the Pan Am Junior Champs, both the men's and women's US 4x4 teams set world under 20 records.
Love it.
Well, women ran 324, men went sub 3, so obviously they're not using the same athletes here.
No.
But it's something to kind of look forward to in future years. Like, they've got amazing depth.
Such amazing depth, yeah. Okay, cool. Right, so to round off this Doha preview special, I've got a little bit of a quiz game for Tom and John. Last time John was on the podcast, we did a bit of a beat the stat man type thing when he did beat, quite convincingly, Michelle Samet at the end of last year.
What have you got me into here?
Okay, so it was a beat the stat man, so it was fairly statty. So to give you a chance, Tom, half of the questions are going to be on...
They're about the Beatles.
About Liverpool.
the Beatles, Katerina Johnson-Thompson, and Merseyside.
Stuff, yeah.
No, so half of the questions will be on the lovely city of Doha, Qatar. So, question number one. I think the easiest way to do this is, can you both, like, buzz in somehow?
Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, you're going to need different types of... Love that. Right? So, John, is that... Tom? Love it. Okay, perfect. Right. Question number one. What is the name... Also, you can't buzz in, like, until I've finished reading. What is the name of the man-made island built off the coast of Doha? Tom?
Fala Island?
No.
Palm Island?
No, it's the Pearl.
Yeah.
Okay, right. What is the Arabic pronunciation of Doha?
I apologise to my hosts. Doha.
I'll give you a clue. It's not Doha. It's got a different prefix.
Hoda.
No points in this round either. It's Adawa.
Adawa.
I should know.
Adawa.
I've seen that on like stats lists and things.
Yeah, it's been around.
Disappointed.
Okay. What is, to the nearest thousand, the city population of Doha? Tom?
1,124,000.
I'll let John go, and whoever gets closest can get a point, because somebody needs to win a point here.
I'd say 1.1 million. Just go a bit lower.
No, 2.38. Oh,
point. I get the point.
So, Tom, this is why I did the Doha bit, to give you a bit of a buffer. Therefore, John destroys you in the athletics round. Okay, final question. What is the name of the traditional costume worn by Qatari men? It's the white, the long white.
Yeah, I've seen them all around the past few days. Don't know what they're called.
Anybody get a buzz in?
I have no idea. Yeah, I have no idea what it's called.
It's called the Thoob.
Thoob?
Would not have got that.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Sounds like someone with a lisp talking about their travel in London. Been on the Thoob.
Okay, so you two need to clearly brush up on your Qatari knowledge before the workshop starts.
It's a beautiful city. I've just enjoyed the architecture more than the statistics behind it.
I've enjoyed the Nando's.
Yeah, we all went to very cultured Nando's in the mall the other day. If you are travelling to Doha, make sure you hit it up. We ended up getting a discount for being a part of the athletics. Is it just media or...?
It's just really cool people.
Yeah.
Get a discount.
Where did you get one? Right, okay, time for the athletics base round. So, this is all World Championships themed. Which female athlete has competed at the most World Championships?
Susanna Faitor.
Correct. Okay, so it's one all. And how many times has she competed?
11.
He didn't buzz in. He didn't buzz in. 11.
That was a joint buzz.
Okay, you can both get half a point.
Okay.
Okay, right, next one.
I didn't know that, by the way.
Youngest ever 100 metre champion.
Men's or women's? Or overall?
Overall. I feel like John...
Just thinking back.
I feel like John knows them both. On both sides. He's trying to work out the days.
Yeah.
Friends. Go on, Tom, I reckon go with your gut whilst he's thinking.
I'm going to buzz in. It might be wrong. I've got... Was Bolt the youngest?
It's not Bolt.
For the women's, I was going to say Lauren Williams.
No, it's Catherine Crabb for the women's, but that's not the answer.
Oh, okay.
So it's a male.
Is it? Oh, it is, yeah, of course.
Just said it.
Come on, Tom, with the steel.
I don't know. I've read that statistics book.
Yeah. Tom proofreads all the World Championship stats books, so I figured he'd maybe be okay at this game. Right, no points. Just, right, no. Johan Blake.
Is it?
Yeah. And how old was he?
He what? Well, hang on, let me work out. He was born December 1989.
John, you can't.
And that was held in August, September.
Come on, you've got to answer straight away, Tom.
21.
Yeah. Correct. So, John's on 2.5, you're on 1.5. Okay, final question. For the win, I guess.
Ten points.
Which country sits 6th on the all-time placing table?
Oh, flip sake.
Pink. God, Tom.
Poland.
No! John.
I say China. I don't know.
Jamaica.
Oh.
Okay.
6th.
By 6th? I think it's behind
six.
USA, Russia, Germany, Kenya, and GB. Then Jamaica.
Where's Poland?
Not 6th. All I know is not 6th. You read the book, not me. okay, right. I had a tiebreaker question if you want to answer it anyway. John, you've won. This is just for.
This is the 10 pointer.
Yeah, this is the 10 point steal. Okay. Alison Felix.
14.
No, you're right. John?
I'm happy to listen to the rest of the question.
Alison Felix has had how many World Championship medals? Relays included.
Oh, I should know. Hang on. Is it 16?
Yes, and that's why he's the stat man. Tom, you got beaten. What was that, 10 points there? So,
12 and a half, one and a half.
Yeah, well, Nobody so far can beat the Statman. It's a bit like the, is it the Chase?
just don't say which one I am.
Okay, that is all we have for this episode of the IWF podcast. But to follow all the action from Doha, you can follow us on all of our social media channels. That's IWF_athletics on Instagram, at IWF.org on Twitter, and the World Athletics Club on Facebook. You can also join in the fun with our official hashtag for the World Championships. That's hashtag World Athletics Champs. And also, if you do it on Twitter, a fun little emoji pops up, which is really cool. So, yeah, love that. Aside from that, guys, thank you very much for joining, as always. And, yeah, I think we'll see you guys on the other side. Any final thoughts?
Men's pole vault world record.
We didn't even speak about the men's pole vault. And the women, quickly. Mondo. Lisek,
yeah.
And on the women's, Stefanidi Sidorova.
Stefanidi.
Newman.
Yeah. Women's world record as well. How about that?
Hey. I'd love to see it. Right, anyway, thank you very much, guys, for listening. And, yeah, I hope you enjoy the World Championships as much as we will.